Hello, everyone. John Hockenberry here. Celeste Headlee is out this morning. Right now, let's check on leading stories at 47 minutes after the hour. Back-to-back speeches by President Obama and Republican House Speaker John Boehner last night drove home just how divided Republicans and Democrats remain on raising the debt ceiling. President Obama says most Americans are beyond frustrated by the gridlock in Congress.
They're fed up with a town where compromise has become a dirty word.
Boehner, in his response, says Republican lawmakers have created a blueprint for cutting spending and reducing future deficits, and it's the White House that is standing in the way.
If the president signs it, the crisis atmosphere that he has created will simply disappear.
President Obama, though, says failing to raise the debt ceiling before next week's deadline would jeopardize the economy under any circumstances. A Pew Research report says the wealth gap between whites and minorities has grown to the widest level in a quarter century. Study co-author Paul Taylor says the recession and the uneven recovery have been brutal to blacks and especially Latinos.
In terms of assets, in terms of wealth, this has been an enormous setback for many, many Americans, but disproportionately it has fallen on minority households.
Whites on average have 20 times the net worth of blacks and 18 times that of Latinos. Some NFL training camps open tomorrow as a four-and-a-half-month lockout comes to an end with a new labor deal for the football league. Colts center Jeff Saturday says he's looking forward to getting back on the field.
This is a fair deal that we're excited to present to our players. We're excited about the opportunity to get back on the field, instead of being in these meeting rooms, being football meeting rooms.
A free agent frenzy, though, will also kick off in the next few days as the players sign deals with teams. You're listening to The Takeaway, where we always want to hear what you have to say. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/The Takeaway. So a discussion now of a lot of the implications of what went on in Norway. We saw the brutality on Friday. We saw the agony and the grief all through the weekend in Norway, a nation of 5 million people. And now rippling around the world is the thought of where does this hatred have its source, and how does it go from ideology to actual brutality? Anders Breivik killed 76 people in that shooting rampage in Norway. He said, according to his lawyer, he wanted to save his country from Muslim domination. But was he just a lone wolf? Here's what one listener has to say.
This is Dave from Jersey City. When something on the extreme right wing does something like this, then it's always couched in, oh, he was just a lone mad wolf. This is very dangerous because it disengages the argument from the fact that there are many people who feel this way.
How does the debate on Muslims and immigration affect people who are inclined to actually exhibit brutal behavior? Oh, here's a case in point. Pam Geller is one of the bloggers that was quoted in Anders Breivik's 1,500-page manifesto that he released on the internet just before he went on his shooting spree. And he referenced all kinds of bloggers and political ideologues. Pam Geller is one of them. She runs the Atlas Shrugged blog and has long spoken out about the threat of Islam in the United States. So we called Pam Geller, and this was her response with us asking what her reaction was that she was cited by Anders Breivik.
This is a lone psychopath, evil, okay, who killed people. And that's what we should be talking about, and that's what we should be mourning, the 73 dead, and not this insane finger-pointing where I was mentioned once and a couple of my news stories were cited in the footnotes in a 1,518-page document, and somehow I'm the story, and you don't see an agenda here?
That's Pam Geller, editor and publisher of Atlas Shrugs, a blog that has spoken about the threat of Islam in America. But Bruce Bauer, a conservative, was also spoken about some of the same issues in a Wall Street Journal piece yesterday. Said he was stunned to discover that Breivik was a reader of his own work, including his book While Europe Slept, How Radical Islam is Destroying the West from Within. In comments posted in 2009 on a Norwegian blog, Breivik expressed admiration for my writings but criticized me for not being a cultural conservative, although he was pleased I was not a Marxist either. Bauer, stunned and shocked and a little bit horrified. Pam Geller, sort of righteous in her indignation that she has no relationship. But what's going on here? What is the connection between political ideology that's very easy to experience online these days and the actual brutality of someone like Anders Breivik? Wajahat Ali joins us. He's a playwright and journalist and currently co-author of the Center for American Progress's report on the drivers of Islamophobia in America. And that report's going to be released next month. Wajahat, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
So give me some context here. Yeah, I've sort of set the table a little bit. Where do you think the connections are? What do you make of Pam Geller saying, hey, I'm not the problem here. We shouldn't be talking about what I write. What do you think?
Well, let's just base it off the evidence. The evidence suggests that Breivik's 1,500-page manifesto, I mean, it was pretty clear. In the 1,500-page memo, he vowed a, quote, brutal and breathtaking operations in order to stop what he said was, quote, the ongoing Islamic colonization of Europe. And he was ideologically inspired, and I think we can safely say that, by the what I would call the hateful anti-Muslim writings and opinions of several notorious American Islamophobes, whom he cites many, many times over and over again in the memo, who have a history, I would say, of working together to profit off of the creation and promotion of misinformation, fear, and bigotry against Muslims.
Wajahat Ali, would you include Pamela Geller in that group?
I would definitely include her. Robert Spencer, her colleague, I would say, and his blog Jihad Watch was mentioned 162 times, cited to 162 times. Pamela Geller was cited to about 12 times.
All right, so Wajahat Ali, respond to this argument that we got from Pamela Geller yesterday.
This shooter in Norway also cited, you know, Darwin and John Locke and Mark Twain. Are they responsible too?
Does she have a point?
Well, you know, I know Pamela Geller is trying to protect herself, but she has a what we call a rich history of promoting Islamophobia and this rhetoric. Specifically, I want to quote a former CIA officer and consultant on terrorism, who was quoted in the New York Times, Mark Sageman, who said this rhetoric is not cost-free. And specifically, they said, just like al-Qaeda emerged from extremist ideologies, their writings, the writings of Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer and David Horowitz and Frank Gaffney, were all mentioned and cited once or numerous times by Breivik in his 1,500-page manifesto. They are the infrastructure from which Breivik emerged.
But is it possible? Let's use the Al Qaeda example for a moment. I mean, yes, you're right. If you know, extremist rhetoric and ideology became the lifeblood of Al Qaeda, but the infrastructure was more the fact that the United States funded those groups as part of the Mujahideen. We gave them the guns. We gave them the money. Without the guns and the money and the explosives, there's no Breivik brutality. Which is more important here?
Well, I mean, what I'm specifically focused on right now is if we have allowed what I would call dangerous fringe voices who, yes, they have a First Amendment right to say what they want to say, but the rhetoric, which is so tainted with an anti-Muslim bias, so tainted with hate, to now be, I would say, mainstreamed and enter the mainstream discourse. Specifically, what people don't know is the background of some of these people like Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer. I mean, just real quick, these people are the co-founders of a group called Stop Islamization of America. Okay, and Stop Islamization of America was cited by the Anti-Defamation League as being a group that promotes a conspiratorial anti-Muslim agenda under the guise of fighting radical Islam. And specifically, this is a group, Pamela Geller's group and Robert Spencer's group, that the ADL has says seeks to rouse public fears by constantly vilifying the Islamic faith.
All right, well, then what's the takeaway here? We've got less than a minute to go. What is the takeaway? More awareness of these groups, or would you actually restrict their speech?
No, I would not restrict their speech at all. I think there has to be an awareness of these groups. It has to be awareness of their agendas. It has to be awareness of the connections that they have, the rich connections. It has to be awareness of the fact that these are some of the major drivers, I would say, and manufacturers of anti-Muslim bigotry and rhetoric.
But people who log into those blogs, should they be reported to the CIA?
No, going too far. It's going too far, in my opinion. But I think, really, it's time to take on the offensive here and really expose these people. Expose them. They have a First Amendment right, but we have to see what they're saying. And, you know, we have to really, as an American citizenry, say, listen, why are we mainstreaming this rhetoric? Why is Pamela Geller on Fox News? Why is Robert Spencer being seen as a legitimate, you know, fair authority on Islam, when they have such deep-seated connections to even European fascists?
What I would say is
fascist here against Muslims.
Well, that awareness presumably is the mission of your report, which comes out next month, right?
That is, and it's going to show all the connections, and it's going to show these people's real agendas, and it's going to trace it. And I really hope people read it.
Wajahat Ali is a playwright, journalist, and currently co-author of the Center for American Progress's report, forthcoming on the drivers of Islamophobia in America. Again, I said it'll be released next month. Wajahat Ali, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, so more of The Takeaway. You can head to our site, thetakeaway.org. Check out some of the other news of the day we're covering, including the debt ceiling debate.
My name is Denise Painter, and I'm from Seneca, South Carolina. There's a lot of us out here. We're unemployed. We don't give a rat's butt about debt ceiling. Get off your butt, get to work, talk to each other, take care of the matter, and get us some jobs.
Nothing to add to that. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.